12 chapter. Verse number 5. Trust in the Lord with all thy heart, and lean not unto thy own understanding. In all thy ways acknowledge him, and he shall direct thy path. These are familiar words, and I think sometimes when we read familiar verses and read or hear familiar verses, that we perhaps just to fail to see them for what they are. So I want to look at these familiar words and try and extract from them some lessons that we will find helpful. It's sometimes thought that the New Testament is the part of the Bible that's occupied with faith, and it's sometimes thought that the Old Testament is not so much about faith but more about rite and ritual and works. Now that is certainly not true. If you go into the Old Testament, you will find that tremendous emphasis is laid on the necessity of faith. I think even then they really did understand that performing religious observances out of a matter of habit or ritual actually achieved and accomplished nothing. That unless a man's heart and soul and spirit was in the thing, it signified nothing. So trust and confidence in God has always been a major preoccupation of Scripture. But this is not so much the faith that justifies us and saves us. This is more to do with the faith that enables us to live for God. And in this little section here, often in the Proverbs, Solomon is speaking to one of his sons. My son, this is the first verse of the chapter, forget not my law. And right the way through this section, for example, chapter 4, verse 1, bring ye children the instruction of the father. It would appear that Solomon, despite all of his many defects and faults, is giving advice, perhaps at an earlier stage of his life, to his own family. And the first piece of advice he gives his family, if you'll forgive me, I'll put myself in loco parentis this morning. The first piece of advice I would give to you, particularly to the younger ones here amongst us, is trust in the Lord. Now, I'm not preaching the gospel at you, though if you're not saved, you need to trust in the Lord. But what I'm saying is, if you are a Christian, continue to trust in him. And notice what Solomon says about that trust. It's with all thy heart. Now, I said this recently, and I wonder if I exaggerated the point, but I've come to the view that I occasionally agree with myself. I've come to the view that I was right to say what I said with this, and I'll repeat it. You can tell me if you don't agree with it afterwards. I think it is true that a half-hearted Christian is nearly worse than an unconverted person. I have found in my life and experience that the most unhappy people and the most unfulfilled people and the saddest people that I encounter in life are those that have made a profession and never really gone on. They tend to be frustrated people, like sad individuals. They're not committed entirely to their assembly. They are not people in the habit of praying in the morning or reading their Bible. And there is just a sadness and a sense of unfulfilled expectation in the lives of these people, and oftentimes they're harder to deal with than the unsaved. That's my experience, anyway, is that they do oftentimes become quite unhappy people in a way even that the unsaved are not. But I think the antidote to that particular state of affairs is this: trust in the Lord with all your heart. That's the advice Solomon was giving. And it's the advice that the Scriptures give, which is, if you want to be what God intended you to be, if you want to be a fulfilled, content, and productive Christian, then trust him completely. Don't just trust him for your soul's eternal destiny. Trust him for today. Trust him for your family. Trust him for your work. Trust him for your future. Trust him for the moment of your death. In every possible connection, trust him. Now, as is often the case in the Psalms and the Proverbs, you've got this technique of writing called parallelism. What that means is that in the Psalms, oftentimes a thought is stated and then it is restated in a slightly different form. There's also another aspect of parallelism where a thought is stated and then the reverse of it is then stated. And we've got an example of that here, because when verse 5 states, "Trust in the Lord with all thy heart," what Solomon does is restate that but in a negative form. "And lean not unto thy own understanding." Now, I hope you can see that the point of that here is to show what the opposite of trusting is. The opposite of trusting God is leaning on your own understanding. Now, I want to clarify and qualify that statement. You say, is this verse teaching me that I should think about things? Is it teaching me that I should not endeavour to understand my circumstances or the course of my life? Is it trying to encourage me to engage in a form of blind, unthinking faith and just simply not engage the understanding at all? Now, that is not what it's teaching. Now, read it carefully. "Trust in the Lord with all thine heart and lean not," this is what it does not say, "lean not on understanding." It says, "lean not on thine own understanding." And what it is speaking about here, and the Christians are as guilty of it as the world, is that we sometimes are fallen to the nasty and damaging habit of seeking to guide ourselves through life, depending only on our own intuition and understanding and ability to comprehend the world in which we live. We make evaluations about our life. We make evaluations about people. We seek to assess the future. We seek to assess our present circumstances. And all that they're doing is we're looking at the world through our own selfish pair of eyes. Now that's leaning on your own understanding. That's leaning on the natural intellect and understanding that you have, that you were given at birth. That is not what you have to do. When you trust in the Lord, you seek to lean on the understanding that He gives you. You look at life, as it were, through the prism of Scripture. You look at life through the prism of prayer. You look at life through the prism of dependence on God. You look at life and try to establish in life what could I do or might I do that would please Him. You see, we live in a very selfish world and we are instinctively selfish creatures. You know, sometimes we are guilty at times of, if I may say so bluntly, rank hypocrisy. And I've had in my life experience in the assemblies occasionally moments when people speak about big decisions they have made in life, as to the career that they've chosen, or the place they're going to live, or the person they're going to marry in life. And they then, at the end of all, add in a rather kind of superficial way that they believe it's the will of the Lord. I could stand straight in front of them looking right in the eyes and say, there's no way that's the Lord's will. All that they're doing is simply making a choice and trying to give it the veneer of respectability. You know, the right decision is not always the easy decision. The right decision is not always the decision that will be most beneficial to you and your family. You know, when we shift job, it's not always about getting a promotion or a bigger salary. Sometimes God's will might be that you take a drop in salary. You see, that is leaning not on your own understanding. Your own understanding is understanding that's guided, directed by your own selfish thoughts and instincts. What suits you? What satisfies your purpose? What meets your needs? This proverb encourages us to trust in Him. And lean on the understanding that He is. Now these are, I say that by the way, with a great deal of caution, because looking back on life, there are many choices that my wife and I have had to make. And we really didn't know what God's will was for us. it's hard sometimes to know God's will. Because it's not, there's not a letter comes through the letterbox in the morning with a 10-point bulleted instruction list saying, this is God's will for the next month. But what this proverb is encouraging us to do, as we seek to live our lives before God, is to trust Him. And not seek to make decisions that are based on our own selfish, self-centered, self-directed understanding of the world. Because that, I think, is what he goes on to say. He shall direct thy paths. But what he is saying here is that there are subjects that preachers preach on around the meetings, and there are subjects, in my opinion, that always attract a slightly bigger crowd. If you advertise a weekend on relationships and marriage, the hall is not big enough to contain the crowd. People are fascinated by that. Prophecy is another subject that absolutely fascinates people. I've written a series of booklets for John Riches, and I've never asked Riches how many they were selling. But the general manager of Riches just a week or two ago told me that of the eight titles I've written so far, the one that has outsold all the others by a margin of 2-1 is the little book I wrote in Prophecy. Now, by the way, that doesn't mean it's better written than the rest. It's got zero to do with that. I don't think it is the best of the eight. But people have this extraordinary absorption in future events. And the more red horses and white horses and grim reapers you stick into the book, the more they will buy it. So what I would say to you about that is that there are some things that we are very much absorbed in. But one of the subjects that we find difficult to deal with and perhaps doesn't draw a crowd is this difficult question of discerning God's will. And God's will is important in the little things of life as well as in the big things of life. But what this verse is teaching us, if we want to know God's will for our life, He won't necessarily send us an envelope. He won't put a message in the clouds above our house on Sunday evening. He'll not give us a vision where an angel with bright wings and burning eyes will communicate with the mind of God to us. Oftentimes we take our decision trusting that it is His will. And this verse teaches us that if we do so, He will direct. So do you see the point? Is that oftentimes when you're at a crossroads in life, when you make your decision, you don't know whether you've gone the right way or the wrong way. You only in retrospect, looking in the rear view mirrors, you realise it's the right decision after all. And what this verse is teaching us is those that trust Him and do not seek to make the decisions for selfish or personal advantage, but rather submit their decision making to His interests. Mm-hmm. This is the promise of Scripture. He will direct your paths. And that is what this verse is teaching. Notice what it is contingent upon. In all thy ways, acknowledge Him. Now, you might read that statement and think that the little word ways there has just got to do with the kind of person you are. You know, somebody, he's in an odd way of behaving himself. That is not, I think, what's in view here. If you look at the book of Proverbs, one of the characteristics of the book is how repeatedly it speaks of paths. I'll just prove that to you. Turn over the page in my Bible, I don't have to turn it on yours. In chapter 4, verse 14, enter not into the path of the wicked. Verse 18, but the path of the just. Verse 26, the path of thy feet. So, right through Scripture, there are paths of judgment, paths of light, paths of righteousness, a path of life, the path of the wicked, the path of uprightness. And what this has got to do with is not a road with cobblestones and tarmac on it, but it's a route through life. It's a course that we pursue that has certain significant characteristics. And so when he says here, in all thy ways, what he's speaking about is a pathway in life, a way, a direction of travel. In all thy ways, acknowledge. Now, I find that a fascinating little expression. It doesn't say, in all thy ways, obey him. Because you see, very oftentimes we don't have a clear command. I oftentimes thought when I was a young man, when I was looking for a partner life, would God not just be kind to me and put a cross on my forehead? And that would take all the hassle out of me. I would know. But you know, for all the big decisions in life, God doesn't always put the star of Bethlehem above the house of the person that you're intended to marry. Remarkably, in the birth of Christ, God did put a star above the house, but God tends not to work in those miraculous ways. What this is, that verse is teaching is that God will direct you in the right path if in your life, as you make your decisions, you acknowledge him. So you submit your decision making to his interests. Now, acknowledge him does not simply mean, as I've just stated, that you pray in a perfunctory way about your decision making, about what you want to do, and then after having said that you're seeking the mind of God in the matter, just do what you would have always done anyway. We are at times guilty of that. We know what we want to do, and even though we claim at times that we're seeking to do the mind of God, all truthfully we're doing is seeking to follow our own understanding, walk our own path. What this is about is acknowledgement in a genuine and substantial sense. Acknowledging him is making decisions in life that are subservient to the greater interests of God and the interests of his people. And that means that it will not always be the easy decision you take. It means it might not always be the most personally profitable decision you take. It may mean that it will cause you loss and inconvenience and difficulty, and may even, who knows, expose you to heartache and pain. But in taking that decision, it is not your interests you're pursuing, you're acknowledging the interests of God. Now, that's a very, very different message this morning from what we've been looking at over the course of the weekend. And these are very familiar verses. But I do have a little bit of a burden about it, because life has taught me that the right decisions are not always easy ones. Life has taught me that the right decisions are not always the ones that suit my interests. Life has taught me that the right decisions in life, the ones that are productive and beneficial and a blessing to you as a Christian, are those decisions that are taken out of a spirit of trusting God, looking to him to bless. Trust in the Lord with all thy heart. So it's got to be a complete commitment to him. In all thy ways, lean not unto thy own understanding. Don't allow yourself, as you think and debate and deal with the difficult issues in life, by what you might call a natural understanding of life. In all thy ways, whichever path in life you take, whether it is an uphill path or a downhill path or a long path or a short path, circuitous path, the pathway, notice it's the word ways is in plural, it's just not the single way through life. We walk multitudes of ways in life. Sometimes we walk a difficult path. Sometimes God, the road opens up before us. Sometimes we climb uphill, sometimes we coast downhill. The pathway of life you're on at any given moment in time can vary infinitely. But in all of those ways, whichever way you're on, acknowledge it. And what the promise of this verse is if you acknowledge God in your walk through life, He will direct you. And you may not be conscious of it at the time, but it is often, again, this is just from experience. I feel that now that I've hit 60, I can begin to speak from experience. I would say, looking back in my life, that God's direction is best seen looking back. It's very, very rare that I've been able to say that I knew the way I should go looking forward. But as you submit your decision making about life, whatever the decisions it is that you have before you at the minute, just remember that put His interests first. Easy to say that, it's far, far more difficult to put into practice. Don't put your interests first. Don't put your material advantage first. There are a whole variety of difficult decisions in life, legitimate things that we have to submit to the scrutiny of God. But what God does promise, and I take it this is just one of those promises that we just have to accept is true, that He shall direct thy path.